Well, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here on a very windy day. It's especially better to be indoors, obviously, than out. So December 17th, 1903, Orville and Wilbur Wright made history as the first people to fly. Now, they were not they're not the first people to attempt flight, and certainly were not the only individuals even at the time who were trying to accomplish that feat, and others got aircraft into the air. However, that didn't always turn out so well. You see, what sets Orville and Wilbur apart is that they were the first to take an aircraft, heavier than aircraft, under its own power, up into the air and bring it back safely to Earth. Okay, so now some of you I see are looking down at your program and saying, who is this guy and why are we getting a lecture on aviation history? Well, please bear with me, because I think you'll find that Orville and Wilbur have something to tell us about enterprise management and starting a new enterprise. So let's think about how they got to where they were. Orville and Wilbur grew up with a fascination about flight. They longed to be in the air. And think about it, at the time, that's something that no one did. No one flew. It hadn't been done. It hadn't been accomplished. So where did they look for inspiration? They looked up. They observed birds in flight. And they spent hours literally watching birds soar. And in particular, they were taken by the fact that a bird could stay in the air for hours with very little energy expended. So they, from watching birds, they learned about lift. They learned about balance. They learned about control. And as they thought about how they could build an aircraft, they studied the bird. They studied birds' wings and the design from a science standpoint, from a physics standpoint. Literally, they mimicked their designs off what they saw in nature. So let's take it down to the ranch level. What can we learn from nature? You know, I'm really happy to follow Casey, because Casey did a lot of my work for me here. Casey spent the last 30 minutes talking about forage types and how they're different, talking about cool season, warm season plants, different types of species and genus, and their plant physiology. All that's important. And how much do you know about your forage and your plant types? This is a cow-calf symposium, but really the cow-calf business is based on grass, built on grass. So it's important to know what we have for forages, what their attributes are. Also, we need to talk about seasonality when we're talking about forages and what nature can teach us. Now, if you're a grazer like I am, you get really excited in the spring, especially if we've had a long, cold winter. Those first few succulent blades of grass that pop out of the ground just looks like candy, and you get so excited about the potential and what you may see coming. But while you've got this forage that's extremely palatable and the cattle chase after it, and you get so excited to watch it grow, but it's kind of worthless, really. I mean, am I right? It's, in terms of its forage nutrition, sure, it has a lot of protein, but there's very little energy and there's almost no dry matter in it. Cattle have to chase really hard and graze a lot just to get a meal. Well, compare that to the end of the season. After you've had especially a productive year like we have this year, we've got lots of forage. Volume is not a problem. Energy is not a problem. However, it's all tied up and lignified because that forage has grown rank and mature. And thinking of some of what Dr. Olson talked about today in terms of what that means from an animal nutrition standpoint. It's important to know your forage and know your resources, but also to know your needs. So that brings us to cow nutrition and yearling nutrition, and they're not the same thing. Okay, we're a week away from Thanksgiving. However, this is not a diagram on how to stuff a turkey. This is actually a line drawing, it's a very simple line drawing that depicts the digestive tract of a beef animal. And it actually shows it over time. And if you look from left to right, from a very young animal to a mature animal. So as we know, ruminant animals got four stomachs. The largest of those is the rumen. And that's where all the capacity is. So in a mature cow, the capacity of the rumen, as I understand it, is somewhere maybe as much as 35 or 40 gallons. That's a lot of capacity. That's a lot of ability to take a variety of feedstuffs and convert them into palatable nutrition for the animal. But think about if you've got that large of a rumen in a mature cow, think about turning out, say, a 500-pound steer calf. That animal is less than half the size of the cow, maybe a third. So you've got to assume that the digestive tract, which is still not probably fully developed, it's nowhere near 35 or 40 gallons, right? So what about the nutritional requirements for that animal, especially if you expect that steer to gain? Is it half or a third of the cow? No, it's like 70, 80% if you want a reasonable gain. So what's that tell us? It tells us we better have a very nutrient-dense ration, a nutrient-dense diet for that younger animal, because he simply doesn't have the capacity or the throughput, as Dr. Olson was talking about, to be able to consume enough calories, enough energy to maintain his body weight and grow. Cow's a wonderful creature. Cow can maintain herself on really poor quality forage. But a younger animal, especially one that's growing and has a higher energy and protein requirements, doesn't have that luxury. So you better plan that into your design when you're managing. So that comes down to balance. As Casey pointed out, plants have different attributes in terms of how they grow, in terms of the nutrition they provide. We also see that the animals have different needs through their life. There's a balance, and we find balance in nature. Once again, let's learn from nature to see what it is that we need at that specific time, keeping those things in balance. So really, that's my first take-home point for what I want to present to you, is that cows and stockers' nutritional needs are very, very different, and we need to plan accordingly. All right, we're back to the air here. You know, when Wilbur and Orville designed their plane, they started with prototypes, and they practiced a lot. As you can see here, this is not an aircraft that anyone is in. It's not motorized. It cannot fly on its own. Basically, what it is a kite. But they started testing their prototypes, testing their designs, so that they could understand when they got to a motorized, full-sized airplane, how it would fly, how it would react, what it took to control it. They spent hours planning and building their aircraft before they ever actually put it together. To bring that back home, how far ahead do we think in terms of adding a stocker enterprise, maybe to a cow-calf program? Actually, because it's an annual program, it's optional, something we can do more or less on the spur of the moment. So what if you wait until, let's say, mid-June, it's been a good year, grass is growing well, you come in and say, gosh, we're having a great grass year, maybe I think I'll go buy some yearlings. So when you buy the calves, you bring them to the ranch, there's a period of time before their microflora can get acclimated to the new environment. The next thing you know, it's August. I mean, what have you really accomplished? So you really have to plan ahead. Let's think about why you would add a stocker enterprise to successful cow-calf operation. First is flexibility in stocking. You know, one truism, if you're a rancher, if you've got a cow herd and you've got a ranch, you either have nine years out of 10, you have not enough cows or you have not enough grass. Very seldom do those two meet. So you can either overstock, plan for a good year and be short on grass, be constantly buying and selling your base cow herd, which becomes expensive and problematic, or if you have an alternate form of livestock that you can add, that gives you a great deal more flexibility. And really, that's what stalkers can provide for you if your base herd is a cow-calf herd. Diversity. I think Casey touched on that some too as well. The diversity both in the animal world and especially in the plant world. Those plants have different qualities, nutritional, time-wise, and as we pointed out, the animals, different classes of animals have different needs at different times as well. If you look across the landscape that is your production unit, chances are you're going to see differences across that spectrum. And if you can, if you're smart about it, you can use different classes of livestock that have different needs at different times and balance your operation to take advantage of that diversity. Once again, nature offers us diversity, and this is simply taking advantage of it. The last reason that you might want to add a stalker enterprise is simple enterprise dynamics. And that could be because stalkers have a different business model that we'll talk about in a bit. But it also might have to do with your labor requirements that vary during the year, unused equipment or other resources, maybe just simple cash flow. There's a lot of reasons that you can add a second enterprise of a second class of stock, and it's like an overlay. So you can take advantage of some of the duplicity that you have. Now I'm going to go back to the Wright brothers here again. Orville and Wilbur Wright grew up and lived in Dayton, Ohio. And as we all probably remember from some elementary school history lesson, they flew their plane in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. Kitty Hawk is a long ways from Dayton, Ohio. Why, if you lived in Dayton, would you pack everything up and ship it out to North Carolina just so you can go for a flight on the beach? Anybody got a thought on that? Why would they do that? Wind. They looked for and researched, because these guys were keen on research, they looked for a location that offered them a strong, consistent wind. So, and it was also the time of year, in the fall, for several years, they spent 3 or 4 months a year on the beaches of Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, because the conditions were more conducive. So what they were looking for is a location, a time, and conditions that offered them the best chance of success. Think about that. I think that's really important, especially when it comes to a stalker operation. To illustrate that, I'm afraid I have to dive off into a little bit of an economics lesson. So first I'm going to talk about a cow-calf program. And I'm going to refer to that as a zero-based economics model. Okay, if you have a cow-calf herd, you start with a cow, you invest in the cow, you add cow costs, direct cow costs, being maintenance costs, feed, health, herd health, breeding costs, that sort of thing. If you're successful, which I'm sure you are, you produce a calf. That calf also has direct costs associated with it. And each of those costs are incremental. They stack upon one upon another, and ultimately we get to the point where we sell a calf. So as long as the revenues from your calf sale exceed all the accumulated costs, you have a successful enterprise. Okay, compare that now with a stalker operation. Your base cost for a stalker operation is the stalker itself, is buying the calf. So you've got the calf cost, you've got a happy finger, you've got a stalker sale on the top side, and everything in between is a margin. So really what you've got here is a margin-based model. Now, the main difference here between the cow-calf and the stalker, obviously, you've got two moving parts. So if you think of it as building a house on a solid foundation, that's a cow-calf program. If you think about building a house on Jell-O, that's a stalker operation because you've got moving parts on both ends. But if you're a stalker operator, you really don't care what the price is. Okay, I'll say that again. I'm a yearling guy. I don't care how much I pay for your calves. I'm as happy to pay a lot as I am a little, so long as I get my margin up on the other end. So it's about managing the cost, managing the buy, managing the sell, and managing the margin in between. Okay, we're going to go back to the Wright brothers here again. But before I do, I forgot to mention my second take-home point here is that the business models, the economic models between a cow-calf herd and a stalker operation are very different. And we need to think through them differently. Okay, so Orville on the left, Wilbur on the right. Obviously, they're brothers, grew up together, probably have a lot in common. However, Orville is kind of he's more business-minded. He's thinking of marketing potential. He's thinking of commercial opportunities. Wilbur is a mechanical guy, more the engineer. Wilbur designed and built most of the parts that they use in their plane. He put it together. Now, don't get me wrong. Both of these guys can fly. But they worked together because they had complementary skills. They had complementary skill sets that helped them become successful in their enterprise. Okay, so what's that mean for us? Let me ask you, what is your skill set? Is it marketing? Nutrition? Finance? Risk management? What is it that you do well? What is it that you don't do so well? Or where are your interests? You know, this morning there were some really excellent presentations on genetics. I have a confession to make. I was by and large bored. Now, I don't mean that personally for any of the presenters because I thought the presentations were excellent and I really did learn some things. But really, that's not where my interest lies. That's not where my ability is. And I don't know a whole lot about genetics. On the other hand, there probably aren't a lot of you that were sitting around with your cell phones checking the futures markets every 15 minutes. So we all come to this with different aptitudes, different abilities, different interests, and we need to follow those. But once again, I'm pointing out differences between a cow-calf and a yearling or stalker operation. If you have some skills and do them very well, but you require others, maybe you develop a network, you have a partner, or you can acquire some of that skill by through extension or a consulting relationship. It's important to shore up your own abilities where you lack. And I think there's a take home here for a cow-calf audience, which I think by and large we have here, is that there are cow-calf people and there are yearling people. And it doesn't mean that you can't do both well, but you probably excel in one or the other. So frankly, if I want to be a cow-calf operator, I'm going to look to one of my brothers or someone else who has expertise in that regard because my skills, my interests are in other places. But what about risk? Let's talk about risk a minute. Certainly, the Wright brothers skinned their knees more than once in the process of designing and building their prototypes and ultimately getting into the air. But let me tell you something else that you probably don't know about Wilbur and Orville Wright, Orville in particular, because he was involved here. They were obviously the first to fly, but there's something else. There's another first by their name, and that is that Orville Wright was responsible for the first air fatality. He was flying his plane, and a key strut wire broke. He lost control. The plane crashed. Orville was seriously injured, and he happened to have a passenger that day, and that young man was killed. It was the first air fatality. The point is, when you try something new, there's risk, and you have to plan for and mitigate that risk, and if you don't, consequences can be grave. So here we are. Got stalkers? As we've talked, there's reasons for adding stalkers to a cow-calf operation. Economics, the flexibility that gives you in management, and efficiencies. But you have to balance that with the complexity that it brings to your operation and the risk that it may bring as well. I'm not telling you not to do it. I'm encouraging you to consider using stockers to complement what you already do well. But just keep in mind it's not for everyone and that you may need to partner with someone when you do it. So if you're going to add stockers to your cow herd, decision really is yours. Keep your head down and your ears up. I appreciate your time, and I will be at a bullpen session this evening and hope to visit with you more then. Thanks.